There is a team whom we call England, 'cause they're all from this pleasant land.
And welcome to the Sound of Football podcast. I'm Graham Sibley, and as ever, I'm joined by Jan Dalton.
Hello.
And Terry DeFellin.
Hello.
Returning Terry DeFellin. Good to have you back.
One week away.
1 week away. Yeah, I know.
That's quite a lot for me, I suppose.
I know, but you're missing next week as well, aren't you?
Well, because you are. Missing next week because you're going on holiday.
Yeah, but I'll be on here.
Yeah, no, that's true. That's perfectly true.
Yeah.
Yeah, but if you were recording on Monday, I'd be there.
Okay, yeah. I mean, this is all very, very confusing, but we will explain to the listeners why these circumstances are happening.
Circumstances.
There
have been circumstances.
Well, of course, it's International Week, and International Week causes things to be... Circumstances, of course. Things get up in the air, and crazy things happen. So, like, you bring in other people. There can be people who can drop out at the last minute. That's what happens in international breaks, isn't
it? That's very true, yeah.
But we've got someone who's dropping in at the last minute, which is very good news for us, because he's an old friend of the show. Well, actually, I say he's an old friend. He's considerably younger than us, but he has been our friend for a long time. Hmm. And it's Chris Nee from the England podcast. Chris, welcome back to The Sound of Football.
Hello, thank you very much. Always good to be with you.
Last time you were on here, it was the preview for the World Cup. So that was just over a year ago.
That's right. And I think I probably predicted a semi-final, didn't I?
Let's say you did. No one's going to check up, are they?
Hopefully will.
Oakley knows. Oakley doesn't have to check up. Oakley has it in his big book that he doesn't even have to refer to. Well, it's great to have you, because today you just dropped a new pod of the England podcast. This was your first one since June, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. We tend to operate mostly around match times, such is the way of international football. So we did some Nations League stuff in the summer and then finally managed to get together in time to do a bit of a review of the Bulgaria game.
Good. And a nice 4-0 win. Everything in the garden's rosy, yeah?
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe a little too rosy. We spoke on the show about how 4-0 is the new 2-0 for England. And we shouldn't underappreciate how positive it is that a routine win now is done very handsomely by England. Because all of us and my co-host Dave, we're old enough to remember when that was not the case. And taking things for granted as an England supporter is a very quick route to disappointment, I think. And there are huge positives with England, and yet there's this big doubt hanging over the midfield when it comes to playing proper opposition. So we will breeze through this group. Phil McNulty had very confidently said in something that he wrote that England will qualify from this group. That is a fact, not a matter of opinion. And he's probably right. But also a fact is that we are playing opposition that we have advantages over at the moment. But the future opposition, the big opposition, when it comes down to the crunch, we still have this midfield-shaped concern, in my opinion.
Yeah. We seem to have an embarrassment of riches up front at the moment. And yet still we seem to be going with Marcus Rashford. Chris, you've said on your podcast about Rashford, about where he is at the moment. The guy's 21 years old. He's got 33 caps. Do you think he should be in the England setup for his own good at the moment?
In a setup, certainly. I think if you look at the five forwards that Gareth Southgate named for this pair of matches, Rashford's in there. And to me, it makes a lot of sense. I wouldn't have started him against Bulgaria. And I think to a certain extent, he proved me wrong. So it's a really tricky one with this club versus country situation. The club form and national team form can be very different. And I think people like to complain that a player has had a weak start to the season and continues to get England minutes. But Gareth Southgate has players that he trusts, and Rashford is one of those. And he also, I think, plays Rashford in his best position, which, as I understand it, is a position that the player himself does not think is his best position. So if he wants to play through the middle, he's got one hell of a challenge to get starting minutes for England there. And I think if Manchester United are going to rely on him to be there, then they're going to be sorely disappointed. So I think he's just about in the setup on merit. And I think he's starting England matches over Jadon Sancho because of England experience.
club form doesn't always transfer into the national team. But Jadon Sancho has, well, he was in great form last season and has started off in brilliant form again for Dortmund.
Yeah, his numbers are very good. Goal tally's good, his assist tally's good. But actually, I mean, I've missed the Union Berlin game, but I've watched pretty much every minute that Jadon Sancho's played this season beyond that, which isn't many, to be fair.
Right.
But actually, his overall game is not as influential, I would say, as it was, say, this time last season, believe it or not, when he was very much on the scene and had arrived. He doesn't disappear, but he does have long, fairly in, I don't know whether Chris agrees with this, but he has long, fairly ineffectual periods this season so far. But then he will like have a, like a mad 30 seconds where he'll do something incredibly cool and a goal will be scored, or he'll create a goal or something like that. But there's not been criticism of Sancho. That, well, there have been people whose job it is to overreact to these things. And they have been overreacting and being critical of Sancho's performance. But it's possible that Southgate may have looked at those and thought that perhaps he needs a little bit more time to bed into the season, and that perhaps he's more of an impact player.
Yeah, I think it comes down to age in large part as well. I think we're very good at forgetting just how young Jadon Sancho is. Mm. And in fairness, Marcus Rashford has also put up a few numbers this season as well, despite the fact that we're watching him much more closely and he's being in the headlines because of the old penalty situation and so on. He has got a couple of goals to his name in the Premier League already this year. So it's probably, you know, next to impossible to get cigarette paper between the two of them. And I think what's nice about Southgate's assessment of these two players in particular is that I have an England manager who I trust and know more than me, which has not always been the case. You know, I've always had the arrogant football supporter's view that I know better than the gaffer. And it's nice to not feel that. I know that he's seen Jadon Sancho more than I have this season.
Yeah. Do you know more than the gaffer?
Depends which gaffer you're talking about. But certainly not Gareth Southgate. No, I'd agree with Chris's assessment there. So yeah, it is quite reassuring to know that there's someone there who actually knows what he's talking about and is very reasoned in the way that he explains himself and welcomes inquiry.
The elephant in the room is the midfield for England. Now, he comes from your hometown. Do you rate Jordan Henderson?
Yes.
Yeah. No,
I do, but I have to admit I'm hugely biased, so I'm probably the wrong person to ask. I do rate him. I think he's a really good player, and I think he's a real engine in the midfield, and I think he can go forward, and he's strong in holding position as well. I quite like him. There are probably, and I'm sure that you're all going to name far better players that should be in that team ahead of him. However, I'm answering the question as it was put to me. And my answer to that is yes, I do rate him.
Square pegs and round holes, though, isn't it? Hendo's being possibly asked to fill a role that he isn't really equipped to do. If I'm understanding what Chris is saying about the midfield issue, is that we're looking for a much more of a kind of number eight, very creative, dynamic central midfield player. You know, we're looking for another Danny Ceballos, but we don't produce players like him.
Apart from perhaps Ross Barkley.
Yeah, maybe. I think what we're missing in midfield is probably the combination, the golden combination of three at the moment, maybe four in the future. And I also rate Jordan Henderson. I think he's at his best for England when he's being asked to play on the half turn and get us moving. And he was really good at that on a few occasions for England. Underrated in that regard, I think. Where we have weaknesses is in finding the little partnerships in that midfield. And I think possibly the inability to get Ross Barkley firing on all cylinders for England is problematic. And it may be that the solution for England is as simple as Mason Mount comes in, gets experienced and answers some of those questions. Mm. It may be that Harry Winks is the missing piece of the puddle. The puzzle. Freudian slip somewhere in there. I'm sure you can figure it out. But what we haven't found is the three that can be there game in, game out and match the, I think, very decent defensive options we have and the, frankly, top-class striking options that we have.
Well, it's clearly Jesse Lingard plus two, isn't it? Well, that seems to be in Southgate's mind anyway.
Yeah, he trusts him, doesn't he? And with good reason. I think it's easy to just lean on club form. And as it happens, I think that Lingard's club form so far this season has been bad enough for him to have dropped out of the squad, as I think he should have. But it was only a few months ago that he was having what might, in other circumstances, have been a telling impact in the Nations League. He has had very good games for England in particular, I think. And Southgate's approach is very much about repaying the players that have performed for him, I think. And I don't see that as a negative. I think that's fine as long as the players who are coming through outside the England setup are able to get in when they prove it on merit. I think Lingard is on the brink.
What about James Maddison then? Where do you think he fits in?
Somewhere behind Jack Grealish, who is massively superior. I think he's kind of on the brink in the other direction. I would be completely unsurprised to see him get his debut this week. I think Southgate likes him, but maybe has a few question marks about his ability to really settle into the England team and have an impact match on match. But I think his ability is going to force him into the picture sooner rather than later. And I think having that seasoned Premier League experience under his belt is going to serve him really well. Grealish is better, though.
How close do you think he is to a call-up, then?
I said in the summer that I was utterly convinced that Jack Grealish would be in the second England squad of this season. I'm less convinced now, but I'm sticking with it. Yeah. Martin Keown style.
It's interesting when you see players like Mason Mount coming through, because obviously he's getting game time at Chelsea. And obviously being a player at a big six club is always going to help. Aaron Wan-Bissaka earned his England call-up months ago, and yet he only gets it as soon as he goes to Man U, and of course, because he's a Man U player...
It was ever thus.
He doesn't bother turning up. You said on your podcast, it brought nostalgic thoughts, didn't it, really, having the United pair not turn up for an England game?
Yeah, I thought it was an interesting note, but Dave felt it a little harder than me, I think. I think he was slightly offended by it, and I think he has concerns about the messages that that sort of thing sends. I personally do believe that Lingard is ill and hasn't chosen to abdicate his responsibilities just yet. But it's an interesting one, Wan-Bissaka, because I'm totally sure that he was going to be in this England squad regardless.
Yeah, we've got an embarrassment of riches now at right back, though, haven't we? It's a lovely time for trying to pick a right back, because really you could have four players there, couldn't you, at the moment at least?
Well, yeah, too many for one squad, it turns out. And Kyle Walker being left out is a bit of an eye-opener if you don't read between the lines and if you don't keep up with Southgate's endless reassuring of his player. I was a little surprised, having not seen him play this season, that Kieran Trippier stepped back into the squad, having been left out in June. And even more surprised that Trent Alexander-Arnold didn't take his place on the pitch against Bulgaria. But what we have there is a list of players who really, I think I'm leaving Kieran Trippier out of that, and that's a very high bar.
Yeah, it's early days yet, isn't it, Terry? Because he's only just gone over to Atletico, hasn't he? So
yeah, I mean, I've not seen Atleti so far, unfortunately.
They've won all three games, though.
They've won. Yeah, they're top of the league, and he's playing.
Yeah,
I can understand Gareth Southgate's thinking, because he likes Trippier, and Trippier has been good for him up to the point when his form fell off a cliff somewhat. He got dropped, but the first opportunity, I think Gareth had to bring him back in, and he was going to do that. And I mean, if he is his guy, then I think it's probably fair that he brings him back. And the impression I get is that he's not exactly pulling up trees there, but at the same time, I mean, he is holding his own in a Simeone squad that's top of La Liga at the minute, and he's playing for a club that isn't either Real Madrid or Barcelona. He's got to be making some kind of impact there, and so it kind of makes sense. And he is an England player. I mean, he's very much part of that thing, part of that squad. Gareth has to weigh up the spirit in the dressing room and the mood in the dressing room, and that chemistry and the politics of what has in the past been a deeply political England dressing room. And Gareth has been able to engineer a squad which doesn't have that, and so it's understandable that he would be careful not to disrupt that chemistry that he's got there. And if it means bringing a player back in from the cold, so to speak, perhaps earlier than others might expect, or without giving other players a chance, you can understand why. It's fraught with problems, of course, because sometimes players genuinely do lose form and stay lost form, and managers keep persisting with them. And it's hard for England managers, indeed international managers in general, to maintain that kind of loyalty while at the same time being pragmatic. And Gareth's job's going to get even harder as the years go on, because gone are the days of Roy Hodgson, where basically the England team picked itself, because we barely had 22 international class players, in my opinion at least. Now, you know, we have a surfeit of players, of good players, and more coming through as well. You know, the big changes that the FA brought in have paid off, and we're going to be awash with talented youngsters. And Gareth's going to have to manage that somehow, get these guys in while at the same time keeping that great chemistry going that served us so well so far, particularly in 2018.
Tammy Abraham is knocking them in for Chelsea every week.
Yeah.
and people aren't seeing Jadon Sancho knocking them in for Dortmund every week, it's going to be Abraham's name that's going to be at the top of people's list and say, why isn't he picking this guy? Because he's scoring loads of goals for a top six side.
Yeah, there is that. Sancho, I think, is the better player. But you're right, it depends on what people are seeing.
As a Sunderland fan, have you always felt that England have been a political body, that they've picked players because of the club they played for rather than the obvious talent they have?
Well, yeah. I mean, the best example was when Kevin Phillips was top scorer in Europe.
Yeah.
And he got one substitute appearance for England. So I think there is probably a little bit of politics there. And I think before Shearer went to Newcastle, I think Newcastle struggled to get any players into the England team as well. But that, you know, that could just be paranoia on my part. In fact, it probably is paranoia on my part. But yeah, I think that, yeah, that can be. If you're not playing for one of the big clubs, or if you're playing for a club that's geographically out of the way, then sometimes it can be difficult for you. And it'd be a shame if Sancho loses out. He won't.
Yeah.
But it would be a shame if he loses out just because the public don't get to see him that often. The public that want to see him can see him whenever they want, of course. But and you've got Tammy Abraham, who's on Match of the Day every week. It's going
to
be...
It's exactly, you know. Yeah. I mean, obviously, it's the England coach's job to see the players. And Gareth's been over to see Dortmund at least once so far this season. And I think he'll definitely be keeping eyes. The broader English public, you know, it's difficult because, yeah, you have to have a BT Sports subscription and you have to be asked to watch German football if you want to watch Sancho. And there are plenty of people in the English public that, for perfectly understandable reasons, will not spend their time doing that. And that's not a criticism. They're absolutely perfectly entitled to focus on their domestic league. So it may mean there will be times, yeah, when you say, well, why has he picked him? What does he do? He said, well, you have to trust your coach that he has seen the player and thinks he's good enough. But, as I implied earlier, funnily enough, he hasn't actually been as influential as you might think, as ridiculous as that statement sounds. So he went through periods of both the games I've seen him play, and not been that good, not been that effective. So, as Chris points out, at 19 years old, he will do that. He'll drift in and out. I mean, what's terrifying, of course, is that when he gets to 23, 24, by which time he'll probably have moved back to England, he's going to be unstoppable. Apparently, he's quite keen on Spain as well, but, we'll see.
A lot of these players, though, have had problems with the starts of the season their clubs have had. So, Dortmund are doing quite well, but they're not doing as well as everyone was expecting them to do, battering everyone straight out of the blocks. And, of course, the issues that are at Manchester United affecting a whole host of the players that we've already discussed. And Barkley, the Chelsea team, are very much finding their way, aren't they? And he's probably trying to find a place for himself in that team with Hazard gone and all the younger guys coming in. He's a fine player, but he's got to find his feet, and that might be affecting how he's turning out.
Chris, what's been your opinion on the way that Lampard has brought through players like Mount and Abraham?
It's very pleasing from an England point of view, and as somebody who watched a great deal of the Championship last season and saw Lampard doing his business, but also Mount and Abraham. He's done it somewhat because he's had his hand forced, but I think that has been overplayed because he has got other options that he can play in those positions, and he's putting his trust in his solution to Chelsea's current situation, which is that he has decided that he is going to be Frank Lampard, the Chelsea manager that brings through Tammy Abraham and Mason Mount, and there will be others as well. I think they're there at the moment because they're performing. I don't think they're there on a freebie. Mount has just hit the ground running, looks every bit the player that we're all hoping he's going to be. I still can't work out Abraham. I watched him score 26 goals for my club last year and get him promoted. And I still wasn't completely sure that I wanted Villa to sign him in the Premier League because I wasn't completely certain that he was going to be the Premier League quality they needed. I've watched him score 4 goals so far in a Premier League team that really needs him to be scoring goals. The team he's always wanted to score goals for. And I'm still not completely certain that he's going to be the quality that they need him to be. Because he's done that against 2 promoted sides. So I've got this really weird relationship with him where I absolutely love him. I rate him very highly and have this huge doubt over how far he's going to be able to go. If he can continue that form in a Chelsea shirt, you could argue he was 3 days too late to be in this England squad. So we'll certainly be in the ones that happen in October and going forward from there. Lampard's responsibility for that is to his club. If he's doing that with young English talent, it's a bonus for us.
Chelsea have got quite an embarrassment of riches when it comes to attacking England players. Callum Hudson-Odoi, Ruben Loftus-Cheek as well. But both of those players are struggling to hold down a place anywhere, really, aren't they?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, Loftus-Cheek has had some injury problems, hasn't he? Which hasn't helped. As indeed, you're quite right, Chris. Yeah, and I mean, Hudson-Odoi. Yeah, it's interesting because obviously there's this whole business with Bayern Munich as well, who wanted to sign him, and I'm kind of assuming that that's been put to bed now, but you can never be entirely certain. But I think Frank has been given that job with the kind of views, look, you know, we've got this transfer embargo, we've got this surfeit of youngsters, we need you to start playing. And I think that was part of his brief when he took that job. I think they gave him the job because they knew he would be the kind of guy who would do that. But he doesn't want to get too carried away and bring in too many, because they're still Chelsea. It has been weird watching Chelsea, actually, because they're like a breath of fresh air. They're very different to the Chelsea that I've become used to, which is just a bunch of experienced, tough bastards that are very, very easy to hate. And this team's actually become quite difficult to hate. Yeah. I'm sure it'll, you know, over time.
you'll get used to things.
But I mean, it is one of the more refreshing aspects of the start of the Premier League season, actually, has been Lampard's Chelsea. I'm kind of hoping it's because I like the idea of Frank one day going on and managing the national team, albeit perhaps, you know, some years into the future.
Yeah.
Or maybe not, actually. Maybe not. Maybe sooner. Maybe sooner rather than later. You know, I mean, why not? I mean, he's got a long career ahead of him. Why not take a kind of international sabbatical after a fairly distinguished club management career? So I think I'm quite pleased with the way that Chelsea team set up. Now, I get what Chris's concerns about Abraham, although I've not watched him anything like as much as he has. But you are looking for that all-round play, I suppose, from someone like that, from a striker. And you're looking maybe for a little bit more razor-sharp finishing, particularly in the Premier League, where you'll get so few chances. But what he will do, what does look like, he's doing enough to be given more chances and be given more minutes. And that's all you can really do at that point, in this point in his career. And it may not work out because he may not be good enough, but I think he'll be given the chance to find out, which is more than quite a few players get. So,
like Super Kev. Mm.
I think that as well, from his point of view, the pressure's kind of off him, really, because he knows they're not going to go and bring in an experienced bastard of a striker, to use your phrase, which I like. I'm going to use that more often. Also, that he's aware that he's got the manager's trust. And yeah, he scored some cracking goals, you're right, Chris, against promoted opposition. But, you know, the fact that he doesn't have someone breathing down his neck might allow him to find his own feet and go from there and crack on, hopefully, because I think he seems like a good player and has certainly got the potential to do well.
Yeah, I agree. It's a funny one with Abraham, because he has scored those four goals against those two promoted sides, and I'm sure he's going to score against the third one as well. But I don't see that as a reason to doubt his ability to score. I think those are Premier League teams, ultimately. And I've seen enough of that all-round play, Terry, that he has the quality to do it in the Premier League, and it's that finishing that slightly worries me. But if he can get into his groove in that regard, which he's certainly in at the moment, the Premier League may well be his oyster.
Now, we did mention the politics of England management earlier, but I'd be interested to know what you think, Chris, about Declan Rice and whether or not you think he's going to get more game time because of the situation of him coming into the squad.
I don't know if that's going to be the reason for him getting game time. I think he's probably going to get it because he has Southgate's backing. I don't think there's a player in his position that immediately jumps out as superior at the moment, and I think that he has that balance of being able to do most of it now and having the huge upside of his youth and his potential to really cement that position. If he had serious competition in a proper defensive, destructive midfield role, also able to play the ball, I think we might see him used a bit more sparingly. At the moment, for me, that's not really an option. I think Eric Dyer has probably had his England race run for him now, because Declan Rice has come in and he's the future of that position. The shape of England's midfield is more likely to have an impact on who plays in it than the circumstances of their inclusion in the squad. So I don't think that England have any reason to include Rice more than anybody else now. That's there, it's done, it's in the past. He's there because he's the best option at the moment in that particular part of the midfield.
Yeah, it might become a point next summer, because England will be playing all their games at Wembley. They might have to play, well, it depends where we play Scotland, because I think if Scotland qualify, they'll be in our group. We have to play them either at Wembley or have to play them at Hampden Park. But let's say for the moment, we'll be playing all our games at home. But if we win that group, as is probably likely if we play them all at home, we play our knockout game in Dublin. Now, having been to Porto in the summer and seeing what a load of pissed up England fans are like in the downtime around a match, Chris, how do you think it's going to go in Dublin next summer?
Well, one of my earliest England memories, unfortunately, is failing to qualify for USA 94. Following that, it's England playing in Dublin in 95.
Yeah.
Didn't go so well.
Yeah.
And I honestly thought we were past all that. And now I honestly think we're not. So I have fears about England playing anywhere. England are playing in Prague on a Friday night soon.
Mm.
And I'm worried about that.
Mm.
So the idea of going to a major tournament game in Dublin is kind of frightening, regardless of right.
Yeah, that's just going to be a sideshow compared to what the real problem will be there.
Yeah,
we play our last group game on the fourth anniversary of Brexit.
The referendum.
Of the referendum, mm. Yeah. There's going to be unpleasantness there if we're still in Europe. Yeah. Because a lot...
Yeah, well, even if we're not.
Still, yeah. I mean,
the backstop has been, the political football's been kicked around. And you'd imagine that some of those people to the right would blame Ireland for insisting on kind of insurance policy.
They're not going to blame themselves, are they?
Well, no, of course they're not going to do that. So a lot of pissed up right-wingers descending on Dublin is not a recipe for anything other than disaster. When you mentioned that before we started recording, I mean, I did feel dread, because that's not even something that you think might happen. I mean, that would be an absolute powder keg.
England's travelling support has become a real headline again over the last couple of seasons, and those various constituent parts of it that are not that pleasant have probably always been there, but they are, for whatever reason, and I'm not going to put a label on it, have been emboldened by things that have happened in the wider world of late, and that position is not one to be going into these games with. And I don't see an easy way to stop it. I think the FA and the police will do everything in their power to ultimately fail to stop anything like that. And I mean, what's the best you can hope for? We get through without getting kicked out of the competition. I won't be going to Dublin, I'll put it that way.
Neither will I.
Yeah, no.
As I said, I was in Porto last summer, and I've spoken to a lot of people who have travelled with England, and especially when there's trouble, they'll say, well, I didn't see any, or it was just a bit of hijinks, a few lads having a good time, really, and the police were a bit heavy-handed. That's a genuine trope, a meme amongst people who go away with England. And now, I too can say that I didn't see any trouble, but I did see a lot of people there for whom trouble would have kicked off at any moment.
Mm.
All you've taken is one bottle to be slung and all of a sudden you've got a riot on your hands. It had that feeling about it. I can't see 20, 30, 40,000 England fans going to Dublin and it ending up well in any measure. I'm really surprised that the route is even taken that way. I mean, because there's not a reason why it should do that. They could easily swap that with another venue.
Is it possible that they may yet, depending on how things go?
I think it's set down in stone. Yeah. I think the wall charts have been printed. So it's...
Yeah, it's, I mean, it's difficult because, at the one hand, I am reluctant to blame UEFA too much for that sort of thing, because they are perfectly entitled to plan their European football tournament without having really to take into consideration the internal political issues of one of the countries. I mean, if you have two countries at war, for example, then they will usually organise to separate them. But Britain and Ireland aren't at war, at least they haven't been for many years now. And this really should be our problem to sort out, and not really necessarily UEFA's problem to try and prevent. Particularly if it does create further logistical issues, which of course we might do. I mean, hands up, who here has ever organised a major international tournament? There, for the benefit of the listeners, there are no hands raised. Mind you, I can't see Chris's hand. Maybe he's raised.
No hands raised here. No.
So I mean, I'm always reluctant to sort of like say, oh, how can they allow something like that? I say, well, you know, how do you know how hard it is or easy it is to do these things and to stage these kinds of events? We don't really know. And also, ultimately, if it does kick off in Dublin, it won't be UEFA's fault.
No.
It will be the England fans, or it'll be whoever is responsible for the kicking off. And I think the risk of making a broader political point, there are too many people around here who are too quick to blame other people for their own mess.
Mm.
And it's not really something that I think that I want to do.
well, it'll sell a lot of papers, whatever happens.
Oh, well, it certainly, yeah, yeah.
I was just going to say, I mean, obviously, playing a match in the Republic of Ireland in that political climate would be obviously the worst case scenario. Not quite as bad, but there are other European cities that you're sending pissed up right wing nutters abroad to where it would also cause some problems. Bilbao, they wouldn't have a good time there. They wouldn't in Rome and Munich. That would be, I think, possibly on par with a Dublin scenario, especially considering how the travelling England supporters behaved last time they were in Germany.
Baku, that's where they need to
should
go.
Send them to Baku,
If we go to Baku, then nobody will be able to afford to go, and so that'll be fine.
Yeah.
Almost any of those, you're quite right, Jan, they've got potential difficulties.
And then going to Russia as well, or going to St. Petersburg and having England and...
Yep, no one went there. Yeah. It was great.
And of course, the good thing, the thing is I would imagine, and this is probably, again, a legacy of unhappier times, but the relationship between the British police and the Irish Gardaí is probably very close because they've had to work together on some deeply, deeply unpleasant crimes and acts of terror that have happened over the decades. So maybe actually this is the best place for them because they're the best equipped to deal with these kind of security issues. So that could be a reason for doing it.
Yeah, maybe we'll be surprised next summer.
I hope you're right.
Yeah, we're just England fans running around giving flowers. Good luck, lads. It's all the best. Let's have some Guinness and sing hearty, non-racist, sectarian songs.
Chris, how do you think the rest of the qualification campaign is going to work?
I think it's going to work out really rather well. I can't see too much of a threat from the teams that we've got. We play Kosovo next. I don't want to make any assumptions about it because
until
we've played them, we don't know.
They're good as well, aren't they?
Yeah, they beat Czech Republic, didn't they, on Saturday? Yep. So they're up and coming.
Of the three teams we've played so far, I just don't see anything to fear. I think England will qualify with relative comfort. I'm certainly not going to assume that England are going to qualify without dropping a point, which is what a lot of people seem to be expecting at the moment, and that is not always how it works out.
And even if it does, it doesn't matter a damn anyway, does it?
Because
it doesn't carry over into the tournament.
That's not a prediction, is it, Chris? That's just something you wouldn't be surprised happening, would it?
No, I wouldn't be surprised at all.
Yeah,
because obviously we don't make predictions here on The Sound of Football, as you well know, Chris.
As I well know, I've very frequently over the years come on and not made any predictions.
It's true.
Now, we have to say, actually, because today, we're recording this on the Monday night, this is the 9th of September, pretty important day for us and Chris, because today is the 10th anniversary of the first Socrates meetup.
Is it really?
Yeah.
How about that?
Well, how about that?
How about that? Does that make you feel old, Chris?
No, it doesn't. It makes me feel whimsical about a past long forgotten.
He's not reached the age yet to feel old about stuff that happened in the past.
That is...
Give him another 10 years.
That's happening frequently. That was a good night.
Yeah. It was a good night.
Yes, it was. It was indeed. And who knows? Maybe they'll happen again sometime. Maybe we'll get all those ones that are now working for The Athletic. Maybe they'll come back down.
Yeah, they'll come back.
Yeah, it'll cost you.
Now, Chris, of course, you've got your England podcast, but you're also doing a, and I use inverted commas, a music podcast as well.
Yes, I am. Two music podcasts, in fact. I like doing podcasts.
Yeah, This Decay is, how many episodes have you got of that now?
That's 25 or 26 now.
And how would you describe it to our listeners?
The main This Decay podcast is myself and my friend Dave alternate recommending an album to one another that we haven't heard before. And generally skewering it and laughing at each other for what terrible musical taste we have.
Sounds perfect.
And then there's the other one.
Yes, we also have a podcast that examines every song ever recorded by the band Slipknot one by one, which is called You Can't Kill Me, and you can find it at thisdecay.com/slipknot.
There you go.
I mean, I've listened to the first couple of episodes of it, and it is up to the usual standard. Yeah. I have listened to the Slipknot. I am aware of its work. I'm partial to a bit of heavy metal. So
yeah. You've moved beyond being metal curious, haven't you?
I am. Yeah, no. I went past metal curious. I wouldn't say I was a metal fan, or indeed, I wouldn't know how to describe metal fans. I've seen Helloween twice.
Yeah.
Twice?
Yeah.
None more metal.
There you go. So consider my spurs earned.
Chris, thank you for coming on to our podcast, because you obviously do so many of them, of course. What's another one, eh?
Thank you for having me.
It's always a pleasure to have you on here, Chris, and we'll have you on here, I think, very soon. We'll probably have you on before the tournament next summer, just to have a bit more talk about England and a bit more Project Fear about the trouble that will no doubt happen. Next week, listeners, we have a very special episode, and it's not just because Terry's not here.
That's part of the reason.
It's part of the reason. But talking about other podcasts, there is a podcast that myself, Jan and Terry have all been on individually, and that's the Betamax Video Club podcast, which is hosted by Rich Nelson. And it's a lot of fun. You've done it twice.
Yeah. Yes.
So you did Commando.
Star Trek 2 and Commando.
Yes.
Commando.
Mm. Yeah, you did Young Guns, didn't you?
I did.
And I did Airplane. Mm. Well, he's coming on to our podcast. So, listeners, this is your homework for this week, if you don't want spoilers, because we're going to be talking about what I think is the best football film ever, even though it's not about proper football.
Mm.
And that's a film called The Club. Now, if you're in the UK and you have got Amazon Prime membership, it's on there. If you don't, then I'm sure you can pick it up for a couple of quid off somewhere anyway. But it's the 1980 version of The Club. That's what we'll be talking about next week. So if you want to watch it before next week's podcast, you've got a week to do it.
Australian listeners should really be across The Club.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, totally.
They really should be across The Club. Totally. There's no excuse if you are Australian and you like football and you've not seen The Club, then get on it because you're missing a treat.
Yeah, yeah. Of course, they might be under 30 or something like that. Yeah.
Why I'm not judging them harshly or being disparaging.
Like we've got people under 30 listening to our podcast.
As if we have people under 30 listening to this podcast. But yeah, now, if you're in our demographic and you're Australian and you haven't seen it, then fill in that welcome gap. You won't regret it. It's top draw.
It is. Excellent film.
You really loved it, didn't you?
I loved it. It's up there with The Hunt for October.
Wow. That
doesn't get higher.
That is high praise indeed.
It doesn't get higher.
That is a high praise indeed. But that is all we have time for this week. So from me, Graham Sibley, from Jan Bilton, and from Terry Fellon, and from our guest, Chris Nee, it's goodbye.
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 You can contact us through our website, sofpodcast.com, via Twitter, @soundoffootball, or on facebook.com/soundoffootball.
But that is all we have time for this week. So from me, Graham Sibley, from Jan Bilton, and from Terry DeFellin, and from our guest, Chris Nee, it's goodbye.
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 Let's do that again. From me, Graham Sibley, from Jan Bilton, and from Terry DeFellin, and from our special guest, Chris Nee, it's goodbye.
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 No. You say it after Terry, okay?
Say that every week.
All right, okay. Last take. Final take.
Yes.
Okay, right.
Right. Remember, after Terry says goodbye, it's goodbye.
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 That's the Easter egg.
That's the Easter egg talk as well.